He's wildly impressed at your knowledge of physics, experimentally and theoretically. And you kind of came out of the blue and had like this extremely interesting origin story when it came to how you acquired such esoteric knowledge of physics. And so it's an honor to have you here, man.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be here. Like you said, we've spoken for quite a while over the years, and I'm very excited to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, man. No, the honor is mine. And you have a really great podcast everybody should check out as well.
Thank you.
It's called Generation Z. And so we're going to go to the limits of my knowledge and ability to understand this stuff. But if we ever exceed that, you can just go watch Zed's channel, and it's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, of course. So I know you to be somebody extremely knowledgeable, not only about UFOs from like an investigative lens, which, you know, a lot of journalists out there know a lot about, like, you know, UFOs and the history of the government vis-a-vis UFOs.
Right.
You know about it from a scientific perspective. And I think a lot of what you get into is actually just man-made, prosaic, human, exotic technology.
Correct.
That sort of mimics UFOs. Maybe it's inspired by UFOs. I don't know.
Right.
But Yeah,
if I can give a little background as to how I got into this, basically. So it was around the time that COVID had hit, and I decided to start a small podcast. And I didn't think at the time, about 4 years ago, that I would be where I am currently. And so what happened essentially was I decided to start looking into the UFO topic in general, UAPs and all that. But then after a couple years of doing the show, I started to say to myself, well, I'm very interested in learning about it and making videos on it. And I was gracious enough to have a small audience that supported me. But I said to myself, well, what if I can actually try and build something? And so I tried to first dive into the theory of things like, you know, Maxwell's equations and so on and so forth. And throughout that process, I recall a very spiritual experience. I'm going to sleep one evening, and it felt like, I don't want to use the word abducted, because I think that implies that there was some negative connotation to the experience, which in this case for me, graciously, there wasn't. But I remember essentially being, I guess you could say, taken by a blue energy type humanoid, if you will. There were no physical characteristics. It was just pure blue energy. And I really couldn't tell.
Why do you say humanoid when you say?
Well, because it had two arms, two legs. It was just significantly taller than you or I, for example, height-wise.
Uh-huh.
And so,
and when you say no physical characteristics, it was like you could move right through it with your hand or something.
Essentially, yes.
Like a plasma being or
basically
something.
Basically, very, not really dense whatsoever, sort of like, right, a plasma, electric plasma type being. And I recall, I can't say for certain, because I don't know if it was a physical experience or a purely an energetic or spiritual one, but
sure.
I recall opening my eyes, and I saw all this basically white light around me, but it seemed like it was a very convex type structure. And then I recall I felt like I was very drowsy, and I recalled seeing this this blue being basically standing very close to my head. And then next thing I knew, I basically closed my eyes, and I woke up the next morning, and I had all of a sudden this extreme drive and inclination to study electrical engineering and quantum physics in particular. And I knew absolutely nothing about it. I failed math, I think, almost every year of high school. And so I spent the first 2 years from there basically learning. I had made some videos where I had discussed these type of concepts on my channel. Without getting into specifics name-wise, I was noticed by a handful of very nice gentlemen that seemingly saw some potential to what I was saying from a physics and engineering perspective. Gave some presentations to those individuals, and since then, continued to learn, many, many cups of coffees later, many late nights spent just reading papers, you know, the Soviet papers, the older North American papers, which is, I think, in terms of zero-point energy tech, a lot of stuff is in the older literature than the modern literature. And then from there, I built a handful of different devices that had some interesting effects that seemed to substantiate what a lot of the theory that people like Dr. Pudoff, Dr. Davis, and others have discussed. However, I must say that there were people going all the way back to the early 1900s, going back to, you know, Nikola Tesla, people, for example, like Gabriel Crone and E.T. Whittaker and so on, that seemed to substantiate certain experiments that I was doing with a partner of mine, using things like, for example, ring superconductors and, you know, looking into the notion of magnetism and so on. And then from there, I continued to network and meet more people, both in the defense industry as well as in the private sector. And there seemed to be more and more validity to what I was looking into. And I don't claim I was the first one to discover this by any stretch.
What were you before you had your experience? You right. had a podcast where you're covering UFOs, is that right?
Correct.
And so you were already somewhat interested in kind of out there subjects, but nothing from a scientific perspective.
Nothing. Since I was young, I always had an interest in, you know, the paranormal and things like that. Nothing from the scientific aspect. Before the podcast, I was in construction.
Yeah.
It was pretty straightforward. There was no, I don't have any formal
degrees.
So
what inspired you to start a UFO podcast as a construction worker?
Well, what happened was COVID had hit, and this was during the time when people had, you know, 2-3 months off where they were staying home. And I said to myself, I looked around at the time at the UFO podcasting field, from what I could find at least, and I could, with all due respect to the shows out there, I couldn't find a show that seemed to be very unbiased and neutral and just looked at evidence rather than implementing a certain biased perspective. And I thought maybe I could contribute to the field by just applying an open mind to it. Now, granted, with that said, that has significantly changed because of fantastic shows like yourself and some others. But at the time, that's what I was doing. And so there came a point where I just kind of got bored and I said, I want to try and, you know, make something and see what I could do dealing with electromagnetism in particular, what that could potentially lead to.
And how far into doing the podcast do you have this amazing blue being experience that prompts you to get into quantum physics?
Probably about just over a year in, maybe a year and a half.
Okay.
So going to 2021 now, give or take.
Is there anything that happened before that experience, or it just seemed like out of the blue, no pun intended?
Literally, no pun intended, out of the blue entirely.
Wow.
Nothing preliminary that was before that.
That's amazing. Okay, so you're prompted to look into both electrical engineering and kind of some more experimental stuff, but also some of the theory behind some of these more exotic lineages in science, if you will.
Right.
And you say you get noticed. Can you say anything more about that? And no worries if you can't.
Certain individuals that that you've interviewed on your show noticed me and asked me to present a couple of times over, and they were very interested in what I had to say, and that told me, well, if I'm onto something, I clearly must be onto semi-feasible at least, because if not, why would there be this show of interest?
Yeah.
And then from there, essentially, I began networking more and more, meeting with different groups of people in the a private military contractor field, meeting with people inside the Defense Department, and officially, there was no way that they could support me, but privately, they were encouraging me significantly to continue pursuing what I was doing. And so at this point in time now, what I essentially do is I consult for private groups as well as for, in some cases, other we'll just say private groups for different aspects of physics. And I don't claim to know a lot by any means compared to certain individuals out there with regards to zero point energy, but I think in a certain capacity I could probably hold my own. And so that's led me to where I am now, and I'm very, very fortunate and very grateful. So,
well, I'll just say the reason we're even doing this is because I don't feel super equipped. I mean, we had an initial conversation. A lot of what you said resonated on some instinctive level with me.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, this guy seems, you know, pretty legit. Like this seems awesome. Like what he's into seems directionally exactly aligned with a lot of intuitions I've had, or even stuff I've discovered just from a historical perspective when it comes to Townsend Brown or high energy physics or certain anomalies with consciousness or whatever.
Right.
You were kind of saying a lot of this stuff, but taking it a little deeper as far as the math and theory of it. But really what convinced me is, I don't know if you remember this, but I was like, oh, okay, I appreciate, you know, meeting you, Zed, this is amazing. But like, you were a construction worker 4 years ago and you just got prompted by a blue being to get into this.
I will say that this will be controversial. However, I know that you're not afraid of any of that. I started looking into, because of what this being had showed me during that one evening experience in a visual sense, I started looking into this notion of what people call longitudinal waves or longitudinal scalar waves. Now, I know there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there about it. I know that we have mutual friends that are currently conducting experiments, looking into basically proving its feasibility and what it could lead to and so on.
And just for the audience, so yes. This is this idea of, you know, sometimes it's called scalar physics, other right. times it's called extended electrodynamics. It's the idea that classical electrodynamics, as we currently hold it, which only allows for the, you know, your typical transverse Hertzian
right.
electromagnetic wave, which attenuates over space-time, electrons pair off, that
right.
sort of thing.
Right.
You actually have this other thing called the scalar field,
right.
which allows for all sorts of exotic wave types where in the transverse Hertzian wave, you have electric field, a magnetic field, and wave propagation, and
right.
all three are perpendicular to one another.
Right.
And in this case, you could have, you know, a magnetic field and, you know, wave propagation, they're parallel. And so it could, you know,
right.
all the, you know, attenuation over normal distances in space-time, that sort of thing, might get kind of negated by these exotic
correct,
wave types.
Correct. And so to your point, very well said, by the way, these longitudinal waves were shown to me by this being basically as slinkies, so to speak, that exist all around us. But because of the way that quantum theory explains it, there or would explain it if there was any official way to that would be allowed through the system to explain it, they exist all around us in what we call, I guess you could say, the quantum vacuum, or what was once called the luminiferous ether many years ago, I think over 100 years ago. They exist all around us, but they also don't simultaneously. So you need to, in other words, curve space-time itself in order to tap these type of waves. So you use the traditional Hertzian transverse waves that we're used to and accustomed to, but you apply certain conditions in an engineering sense to them in which will allow space-time to curve. Now,
how do you do that?
This is where it's interesting, and I will get into that. So essentially, if I may start with a very basic foundation here, everything that is taught, to my understanding, within particle physics, electrical engineering on a basic level have to do with what are called U1 models that essentially assume a flat space-time. So in other words, in the condition of a flat space-time, you cannot get these effects. And if you begin to curve space-time itself, which I'll explain practically, you can start to see this certain type of phenomenology that you otherwise would not see. So what do I mean by that? For example, the Aronoff-Bohm effect shows essentially that potentials themselves, more formally called the four vector potentials, are actually more fundamental than physical fields. And I don't think I know there's a lot of people privately that grasp it even better than I do, but I think publicly there are a lot of people that truly don't see that because it maybe seems too esoteric or too magical or what have you. But the idea here is that essentially the electromagnetic vector potential can allow for the curving of space-time in a topological sense. So in the laboratory, you energetically start to get these caduceus-like waves that occur longitudinally that are initially start off in a transverse sense. Now, in a very simple regard, one way that space-time itself could be curved would be having to do with spinning, for example, a capacitor, if you will. Because what you're doing from a mechanical perspective is you're inducing curvature within that local vicinity of space-time. Now, I'm paraphrasing here, and forgive me for those that are watching this later on, where if you look up the actual quote, I may be a little bit wrong here, but Feynman said something peculiar, which is that when you are charging a capacitor, you start to see the sparks come in on the edges of the gap of the actual capacitor instead of where you're charging it from, which implies that there's some type of kinetic momentum, if you will, within the quantum vacuum or the ether that is right in front of us that we don't have take a certain perspective to in order to be able to see it for what it could be or what it could lead to. So, for example, people look at the Aronoff-Bohm effect and they think, well, what does this mean? Well, it's possible that by implementing a vector and scalar potentials electromagnetically, you can start to induce curved space-time phenomenologies topologically that otherwise you could not do with a flat space-time metric. So from a chemistry perspective, say you have an acid and a hydroxide and you neutralize the two in the laboratory. But what happens is you don't get any exothermic reaction. In other words, you don't get any heat. The standard U1 model that assumes a flat space-time says you will always get heat. There's nothing wrong with that standard model under the assumption that space-time is always flat. But if space-time is curved, it's possible that you may start to deal with negative entropy or negentropy rather than entropy or forward-moving entropy as we now know it to be. So what that means is we start getting these waves and phenomena that would otherwise not be realizable, because when you curve space-time, you start to induce a caduceus-like effect.
What's caduceus?
Caduceus meaning essentially like two waves, like the serpent, the medical symbol, the serpent moving around the a staff.
Yeah.
So the actual serpent itself would be representative of the waves, or the same way if you think of our DNA double helix, so to speak. And so what happens is that when you're in the when you see these effects with this acid and hydroxide, it's possible that there may be a negative energy aspect that is occurring, which means that you may have electrical effects in that experiment where the electricity is cold instead of hot. And this also overlaps directly in the to the field with low energy nuclear reactions, cold fusion. And so it gets very interesting, because you start to realize that there are these vortex-like geometries in the laboratory, whether it's with chemistry, whether it's with electrical engineering or so on, or particle physics, that otherwise you would not get if you assumed a flat space-time. So what happens is, if somebody says, a scientist may come in and say, oh, that's just sulfuric acid, I would beg to differ. It would be sulfuric acid if you unkinked the space-time topology that the curvature of space-time itself allowed you to induce. Now, if you unkinked it, if you think of basically just two, you know, chains locking into each other, if you unkink those chains or those fields, if you will, now you're back to a flat space-time. But if you're dealing with curving space-time, you start to get these phenomena that otherwise you would not expect, and to my knowledge, at least, are not taught within certain schools and institutions. And so, ideally, what
so as far as producing these effects, right, are you saying that space-time itself is actually curved, or are you saying that you can use high electromagnetism to curve space-time?
Space-time, it wants to be curved. So in other words, you have to mechanically or artificially induce curvature in it.
And you do that through electromagnetism?
You can.
I was talking to a scientist named Bob McGuire. Do you know him?
I've heard of him.
And you know, he was talking about the stress energy tensor,
right,
in Einstein's equations,
right.
And you know how sort of conventionally in physics, if you have enough electromagnetism, you should be able to curve space time. But we really just know that occurs through mass, because you have planetary cosmology where there's sort of this inward gravitational force,
right.
But it doesn't really feel like, from an engineering perspective, we have the ability to create, the enormous amount of electromagnetism in order to curve space-time. What do you think?
This is a great question. I appreciate it. So I would say that we actually can, and we have privately, as humans, without even needing to look at any type of reverse engineered programs. Although I'm sure, if one is working on a project and they're given access to reverse engineered legacy programs, they'd be able to, cross-reference and make vast advancements.